The second thing is how interconnected we are in this world, between things like engineering, healthcare, business, real estate. You think all these things are separate? They are not.
Hey guys, welcome. Jim Manning here with the Passive Wealth Show. What this show is designed to do is to help people build passive wealth investing in real estate so that one day they can replace their income. Our team here has generated 100% passive income on over $250 million invested with us over the last 15 years. So I'm here to share some of the lessons that I've learned along the way to pay it forward for all the help that I've received over the years. So onward and upward, my friends. Here's to true passive wealth. Let's get going on the show. This is Jim here with another episode of the Passive Wealth Show. And today I am thrilled to have with us Dr. Don Kapner. And Dr. Don has a variety of experience. He sold a company to Reebok called Above the Rim. Oh my gosh, that was over 20 years ago. And Dr. Don, you're going to have to correct me on some of these details. I was trying to take notes and make sure I was doing a good job, but my ADD, sometimes I don't get all the details right. But he was able to do that. And then he's found his purpose now, pouring into academia and building other business leaders. So, we got a lot to dig in tonight. And thank you so much for tuning in, and let's get going on an episode. So tell us a little bit about you, and let's get going.
Thanks, Jim, for having me on the show. Super excited. I want to first say that I work with a lot of students, and I'm currently the dean at the business school, the Lewis College of Business at Marshall University. And one of the reasons I got into academia is the funnest thing I did when I was an entrepreneur and I had small companies was not just hiring people and, you know, developing them, but seeing them blossom in their careers. And I thought, hey, if I could do that full time and then times it by 20 or 30 individuals, wouldn't that be excellent and a wonderful way to spend my time and my energy? And so, whereas I spent a lot of years at the Leo Burnett Company working on the Visa business, trying to get people into revolving credit card debt, okay, as the lead member of that team, I said, I don't want that to be the why for me at the end of my life, that I got tons of people into credit card debt. I mean, we did some cool things. I loved the opportunity. We converted all the old automatic teller cards to Visa cards.
Yeah.
And then they became, you know, much more, let's call it, the utility increased dramatically. And at the same time, you know, we introduced a bunch of airline cards while I was there. And so it was, I'm proud of the work that I did, but it wasn't what I wanted on my tombstone.
Yeah. So, so did you, like, thinking back now, did you, was there like an unhappiness, or you're like just a little unsettled, like just knowing like, hey, there's gotta be something else, or walk us through that.
So anyone who's contemplating, you know, maybe you've got a great career, maybe you're being well compensated, or you own your own company, but it feels like you're repeating things that you just don't see yourself doing for the rest of your life. You come to that moment, maybe even an epiphany, that you want to find your why or your purpose, and you want to think about what's next. And that happened to me when I was teaching part-time for San Diego State University. I was teaching the capstone marketing and advertising class, and I had my own agency in San Diego with my brother, Robert, and we had grown that firm up, but I just didn't see that to be my forever future. And every time I helped one of those young people find a paid internship or a full-time job, it just gave me such a pump up that I said, if I could ever afford to do this full-time, I would love to do that. And it didn't happen right away. I had to compartmentalize that for several years. And later, after maybe another 10 years, I was able to realize that dream and went on, earned my PhD and became dean of the Davis College of Business at Jacksonville University as my kind of first post-PhD assignment.
That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, what's interesting is I just now turned 40, but I've been an entrepreneur since I was 22. And so I'm kind of right around that 20-year mark that you had as an entrepreneur now. And one of the shifts that I feel like I'm having as I get into the middle of my life and my hair and my bald spot are growing.
You don't worry, you're growing. Not going where I am. So you're good.
You know what? Yeah. I might be like my dad. Those of you listening in, Don's completely bald. My dad has like some sideburns and stuff. Like I'm hoping I at least keep a little bit, but I'm certainly going to lose everything on top of my head. But you know, like there's a concept in investing like that people talk about. And a lot of times we focus on internal rate of return and, you know, like how much money we're going to make. But then there's also this concept of impact investing. And you can think about an eternal rate of return. And I'm so fascinated by that because, like, I have to be real with you guys. There are team members that are no longer with us that had to have felt like they were just like a widget on our team because they were a means to an end for us. We're trying to do good things for the world, right? We're trying to benefit things and improve properties on the real estate side. But, you know, like, did I know like their kids' names? Did I like see them as people and the value and work on helping develop them as people and in return developing myself? And I missed the boat for a really long time. And, you know, now we're fortunate that, you know, I've kind of seen the light and we're working on impact investing and everything like that. But did you have a similar kind of evolution to me? Is that part of how you got into academia, do you think, or like how'd that light bulb go off for you? Like
the light bulb was always on after that experience that I had as a young 28, 29 year old. I had earned my master's at the Thunderbird School, which now is ASU's International Business School. I earned an MBA there early in my 20s. So I was like qualified to, you know, teach at least as an adjunct early on. And so I was pretty young when that came, those opportunities came and that epiphany that I would love to figure out how to impact not necessarily just young people, because I think we're lifelong learners now. And, you know, you've heard the S-curve kind of idea, and I'm on another S-curve now. The S-curve idea in a nutshell is that basically, you know, you start something new, you get excited about it, and you feel all this acceleration as you, you know, really get your feet under you, your sea legs, so to speak. Yep. You're learning, you're growing, you're actually performing better. And then you hit a kind of a apex. And if you don't kind of reinvent yourself, then you go down and you go down pretty fast. And the only way to kind of make the S-curve work is then to get on another S-curve, actually, and go up again. And so my initial one was as a marketing practitioner and my first S-curve. And my second S-curve was learning the world of academia. But my idea was, can I make a difference in academia? Can I make it more practical, more relevant, help more people? That became my why. And as you know, the today's story is all about protesters at UCLA and Columbia. And of course, they are protesting the war. You know, they're angry about the Gaza Strip and what's happened. And yet at the same time, I think a lot of people are frustrated about academic institutions because you pay a lot of money and you expect a big delta, a big change to happen between when you start and when you graduate. And if that's not delivered, there's a lot of angry people. And I think there's a lot of angry people right now. And I even saw that back when I got into academia. I wanted to make a difference and not be part of that problem.
Yeah. And have it more practical. And I mean, the reality is like, a coach can draw up the best play in the world and someone still has to catch the football, right? Like you can get the best education in the world and you still have to be able to catch it. And, you know, it's funny how like none of this is new. I mean, I remember studying history and all the Vietnam stuff that went on and like the Kent State massacre and all, you know, I mean, it's interesting how we forget so much and like how this feels new. And it seems like college students are becoming aware that there's problems in the world. And so then they want to complain about it. It's like, well, yeah, we already know there's problems in the world, guys. You're just now getting aware of it. Help us solve that, please. You know.
Yeah. Love. I love the engagement. You know. I mean, whatever side you're on, it's great that people are engaged and wanting to have a better world. So that I applaud. I just, you know, I just wonder sometimes, you know, where institutions are, institutions of higher learning are in terms of their true purpose. I mean, are they really there for student success? And is that their focus?
Yeah.
And as long as I'm in academia, that's going to be my focus. But I'm kind of on another S curve. I just want to tell you about that. I've done my academics, cool. I really feel like now I've been doing some consulting from a former student of mine who is at Jacksonville University and an MBA student by the name of Matthew Chang. And Matthew said, hey, we're getting involved in some strategy consulting. Do you want to come on and as a fractional player? And I said, you know what? That sounds fun. That sounds relevant. I want to do deals again. So there are things that I miss.
Getting back to the deals. I love it.
from the days of when I was in my own companies and with my own, I'll call it industry practice, that I really, really miss. And so I'm sort of jumping on another one right now with the idea that maybe I'm going to, in the future, do a little less deaning and a lot of more, I'll call it practical, hands-on consulting or even, you know, practice and industry.
All right. So I tell you what, let's end on that because that's really curious. I want to take a tiny little bit of a detour before we get into this, this phase. So, so you exited the company when you, what year was that when you sold to Reebok?
Yeah. So yeah, it finalized in 1993 and then, Above the Rim became Reebok's international global brand.
Okay.
For several years. They have since in the last year or so, you know, brought it back with the pump and everything. You know, they brought back several of the things that were iconic about the Above the Rim brand and shoes and apparel. So
walk me into you have this exit. And like, did you hit the golf course for a little bit or like, did you just mess around or did you get like right to work or like what happened like after the exit, like in your life?
So the, my brother and I were partners and if you had a partner, you'll understand this. Not all partnerships are 50-50. Mm-hmm. So, for me at the time, I wasn't in the position to make the 50% investment at the time. And so my brother had a majority stake. And so when we sold, he was the one able to take 5 years off or what have you, 4 or 5 years off. And I was kind of like, yeah, maybe I could take a year and a half or something, but you know, I'm not going to be in a position that this is going to set me up for life. So as a result, I didn't have that same, maybe your sounds like your exit was very different. So for me, I was kind of like back in the game right away. And I was working for a large company and we had an advertising agency in addition to Above the Rim. And so we also sold that agency and I ended up working for the largest agency in Chicago, the Leo Burnett Company, which then was the part of it was called Frankel and Company that I was part of. So
gotcha. So then it really was, okay, I can take some time off, but okay, I'm young. It's time to, let's just keep working. So then you got into, you did that. Then you explained why you got into academia. And then as you were following what was in your heart and your purpose there, what were some of the things that you learned through academia from that pursuit and trying to pour into others?
Well, approach at least purpose in life and some of these big topics from what you called maybe an eternal, you know, or a, you know, biblical perspective. So my sense was, you know, what can I do to, you know, create value for other people and at the same time make a living. So yeah, I still needed to make a living and I had young children and they were, you know, going to be going to college and the whole bit. So I, you know, always in the back of my mind, of course, you know, I had that responsibility but at the same time, I was searching every year more and more for purpose. And I don't know how you felt, but it just got stronger as I got older in my 40s. So mm-hmm. as a result of that, the ability to kind of get back, I'm early in my life, I did some service for my church and I got fluent in the Japanese language and lived in Japan. And so one of the things that academia allowed me is getting reconnected to international business in a way that my own career really didn't. I mean, yeah, did we sail above the rim Reebok in Asia? Yes. In China, Japan, mm-hmm. South Korea, for sure. We had, you know, a strong enterprise, but I was never really, that wasn't my sole purpose. And I wasn't flying back and forth to Tokyo or I wasn't an expat like I dreamed when I was a MBA student working for, you know, in Asia. So this allowed me to kind of also reconnect that, which really fueled one of my passions, which is to help people understand how learning other cultures and working with other people is the true diversity. It is the true way to really open up your mind and be inclusive. And so for all those reasons, I just love being able to reconnect in every which way to that international focus. And I started going over to Japan a lot. I even got an opportunity to teach at Waseda University, the top private university in Japan, international business for a year in 2006, 2007. And so this really fueled my passion and gave me kind of a purpose beyond helping students and helping mm-hmm. students succeed and get their first jobs. But also in my own way, I was helping model and helping students understand how to be open and an understanding of other cultures and other backgrounds and other perspectives.
Have you seen any patterns from students that ended up going on to be very successful versus other students that, you know, just kind of limped along, so to speak? Like, are there any like characteristics or like, you know, could you spot like, okay, this guy's an all-star, he's going to do huge, massive things? Like talk to me a little bit about that.
I love this discussion. Question, because every time I can identify two or three things. One of them, of course, is intellectual curiosity. And what I mean by that is you're able to have passion once you learn about something and it sounds like it makes sense or works or, hey, this could be important, that then they have the thirst for that, for more knowledge and the ability to kind of figure out how to apply that knowledge. So that's what true intellectual curiosity is to not just, oh, that's an interesting, you know, trivia thing to put in my head, or, you know, just learning sports facts or something is one level. But the level I'm talking about is much beyond that. And students who demonstrated that, those students were the most successful. The other part of this was, of course, things that you hear now about, you know, grit, fortitude, the ability to hang in there when times are tough, and you know, show some initiative, and that is sometimes very difficult in a university setting to instill in people if they mm-hmm. don't already have at least a desire. But what I found was competitions that were outside of the classroom, like for case competitions, business, you know, competitions, even investment competitions like the CFA Investment Challenge and others, brought that out in some students in ways that you'd say, oh, clearly they're going to be superstars. Uh-huh. The other thing that I saw is when I took students overseas for even if it's a short 3 week or 4 week kind of thing, and we did a consulting project. It's not just to look around at and be a tourist. I mean, this was like work and students who really demonstrated tenacity and ability to perform, or even the desire to perform in those kinds of situations. Wow, they have way outperformed anyone else. And you know, even if they didn't have those opportunities, I'd see that in and around, you know, things outside of the classroom mm-hmm. that was the mark of success of those students.
That's so interesting. And, you know, like we don't, how much do we really do in that? I guess, I don't know how you would even do that much for grit in a classroom, like taking tests and stuff. I read a study one time that athletes end up on average making more money than non-athletes. And, you know, my if you had asked me why do I think that, it would be just because of that. Like you learn how to fail, you learn how to try your best, and sometimes you win, sometimes you fail. And so there's this whole body of work that helps you with grit, helps you with fortitude, and that then you can apply to like developing skills in the real world when you start out in that. And and I'm not sure if it has to be like an athletic, by the way. I think there's something to be said about someone that masters like the piano or some sort of
musical instrument, for sure.
Or even, you know, one of those Rubik's Cubes guys or whatever, you know, like have you took the time to really get good at something, and all mm-hmm. the self-doubt that goes into, oh, am I really that good? And conquering that. Okay, so let's get into the last phase of your the next phase, I should say, of where you're at now. So looking to get into, I think you said some fractional consulting work, right? So, tell me more about that and what you're looking to achieve there.
Well, I'm 60 something young. And okay. I'm sure you'll be there at 20 some plus years, you know, 25 mm-hmm. years, whatever it is. And by the way, I'm getting the inkling that you were probably an athlete too. Were you an athlete at the college level?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, that I get that sense, of course. And mm-hmm. and I'm going to guess football or no?
Baseball guy.
Baseball guy. Yep, okay, what position? Guy. What position?
Catcher.
Wow. Okay. So lots of respect for you're practically in every play, and you are a serious contributor to the success and culture of your team. Well, from my standpoint, this former student, Matt Chang, that I mentioned earlier, started an engineering services company. So not being an engineer, I never really, you know, connected in the way that maybe I would with someone who had either started a marketing agency or even fintech or something, which because I've worked on Visa so much and so many other financial firms, I had the natural affinity. Well, but the more I found out about what they're doing, they are basically creating autonomous systems for all of these manufacturers and others who are having a hard time keeping workers. Like one of the areas where he's doing research and is that they are doing auto, like meat production with auto cuts using both laser and robotic technology to get it down to less than 1%. And imagine how ugly an environment is where butchering is happening everywhere. And, you're going, and the more automation, the more it's both safe and clean, and it's a better environment for those people who are working. And so another one was hybrid power for industrial equipment like snow blowers and for mining, construction, other things. So these large scale trucks right now, the powering those things in an all electric is a huge engineering challenge, let alone, you know, with hybrid. But he's with the as I said, fortitude and his forward thinking vision, he goes after this stuff. And robots in a hospital environment, they're doing that with one of the top healthcare providers to make it easier for nurses to not have to be lugging, you know, healthcare supplies all the time and replenishing rooms and all of that. And they're having like just-in-time delivery of all the health devices and stuff. So I started thinking that's really making a difference. And not only is it a for-profit business, but it's But then they turn around and he ties his business, tithes it, and he, you know, is involved with all these not-for-profits in the North Florida region. And his philosophy was something that I admired so much that I followed his career closely. And I was just thrilled when I got the invitation to start looking at, you know, when a company, a large manufacturer, wants to redo their factory or update it, there's a lot of considerations. And the Chang Robotics is the name of this company. They're right there as one of the top providers in the Southeast, figuring this out for people and work for great companies. And but they have these large CapEx budgets and they need to go to CFO. They need to be able to speak to CFOs and to investors and everyone else. And so they need business. It's not just great engineering. They need business and we need to figure out what the return on investment is going to be and how quick the CapEx investment can be returned to the shareholders or to investors. So I'm working in that area. Man, am I learning. I'm on a steep S curve and I'm loving it.
Oh, that's so cool. So you're really consulting with them to kind of help them get to the next level is what it sounds like.
Exactly.
It is pretty mind blowing to think about what's happening with technology and really like the world in general. And I mean, I keep talking to friends and they're like, where are all the people at? Like, where, as far as like jobs go, like I have all these jobs open and available. And yeah. Well, I mean, some of the young generations like making TikTok videos now, you know, and like,
yeah, the number one job I hear is to be an influencer. Every young kid wants to be an influencer. Yeah. I'm like, well, wait, you got to know something about something, don't you? Right. And they're like, I'm not sure.
No.
And I'm like, it doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah. So the, I mean, it's going to be so fascinating to like see how all this plays out and the AI stuff. And you know, what's funny is on the investing side of things, we haven't talked much about that, but you know, like my investor hat's just seeing this as just such a big opportunity. Yes, to invest into businesses, but also investing into real estate because we're short on housing right now. And who's going to build the houses? It's the younger generation doesn't want construction jobs. And one in every four construction workers over the age of 55 now. Wow. So, you know, like to me, the common sense investment play is, hey, let's just buy and hold on to as much as we possibly can and laugh all the way to the bank, you know, as we, you know, take advantage of the housing crisis. So, you know, it's really fun for me to think strategically and look into things. And I mean, I tell you what Chang and what you guys are doing over there, like if I was an engineer and I knew anything about that, I would be all over that. I'm like, you know, I'm a real estate guy. That's what I know. Right. So, you know, as we kind of wrap up this call, you know, like what advice would you give to your younger self, you know, when you're considering selling your company or not, you know, like what would be like some of the most important you could tell yourself, you know, I guess this was 30 years ago or whatever the heck it was. I know it's, or you said 1990, right? So, yeah. What do you wish you, what do you know now that you wish you knew then?
So there's at least three or four things that I wish I had focused on more. And that is my network. And what I mean is the relationships matter and face-to-face relationships matter. Going out of your way to have a 360-degree experience with the people that you want relationships with is more important than ever. There was an old United commercial that I put on my LinkedIn, very old. I mean, I was 28 or so when it came out, but the premise of it was that they were losing business and the senior leader came in and handed everybody United Airline tickets and said, we're now only doing, you know, we can't just talk on the phone and have faxing back and forth with our clients. We need them to know us. And we need, more importantly, to know them. And, you know, it doesn't matter if we know someone, it's if they know us. And so go out there and get people to actually know you and remember you. and be able to talk about you. That's one. And that's self-serving. And the better part of it is there's a service part of this, of, you know, being willing to help others and not look for something that is going to be an immediate payback, because long term, things tend to balance out. The second thing is how interconnected we are in this world, between things like engineering, healthcare, business, real estate, you've been talking about, investments. You think all these things are separate and silos? They are not. And the more the world moves faster, the more interconnected all of these things, not just people, but the more interconnected these different areas of business become. So use that intellectual curiosity I talked about to learn about things that may or may not be part of your business, but because the world's so interconnected, these are super important areas of our world. And that goes also to what I told you about internationalization. Whether you ever travel abroad or not, knowing something about another culture, maybe not going to the extent of being fluent in the language. It took me a long time and but really, truly understanding another culture and being open to how they do things and why they do things will open up your world and make it much more rich than it was before. You know, you just had your own, you know, your own filters by which you looked at the world and how things should happen or how things should work. So be open, and it'll enrich your life. Be, you know, globally minded, so to speak. And then the last one is make sure that whatever technology you're using and incorporate, that it's people centric. And so if there's robots in the future, how do we make those cobots in that they work in conjunction or for and on behalf of teammates? Don't compartmentalize it in the way that most people do, because we need human friendly technology. We need human friendly relationships. And don't let technology actually be a stumbling block to that. And so those are just a few things for maybe if I was born in 2000, that I would be telling myself, or listening to, hopefully, and hopefully incorporating that into my life and time.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us. Congratulations on all the success so far, and good luck with all the extra stuff you're working on now. That's so exciting. So, guys, that's a wrap for today's episode. If you're listening to this and have any kind of curiosity or interest on the Passive Wealth Show, we have a website, passivewealthshow.com. And on it is, you know, if you feel like talking to one of our team members, we can help you with strategy and help you figure out how to build passive wealth, whether that's actively investing or doing it on the passive front. So check out our website, passivewealthshow.com. And then also, Dr. Don, do you have like a website or anything like that? Is there any way that people Yes. could connect with you?
I mentioned Chang Robotics, and it's changrobotics.com. And you can, you know, find me there. And I look forward to the other one is I'm at Marshall University, and be happy to have people reach out and connect with me.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks again. Have a great day, guys. And we'll see you next time. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have a website, passivewealthshow.com, where you can get more great content and resources. We offer a passive profit strategy session, and you can find that on our website as well, where we'll basically ask you a bunch of discovery questions and help you figure out if investing passively is a good thing for you or not. So go to our website, passivewealthshow.com, and we'll go from there.